An historic lack of investment in care, especially in the areas of elder care, has resulted in long-term care or LTC facilities being at the epicenter of the COVID-19 pandemic in various nations. Welcome to the latest podcast of the Balsillie Papers, a peer-reviewed and concise examination of humanity's most critical global problems and how to best achieve the national and global impacts needed to solve them. Today's episode features the Balsillie paper entitled Migrant Care Labor and the COVID-19 Long-Term Care Crisis. How did we get here? It's authored by Lena Gawai and Margaret Walton Roberts, and it was first published in June of 2020. This paper and all Balsillie papers are brought to you by the Balsillie School of International Affairs in Waterloo, Ontario, Canada. You can find them all online for free, open access, at www.balsilliepapers.ca. Now, turning to today's podcast, from Volume 2, Issue 2, we give you Migrant Care Labor and the COVID-19 Long-Term Crisis. How did we get here? The COVID-19 pandemic has exacerbated and accentuated an ongoing crisis of care. An historic lack of investment in care, especially in areas of elder care, has resulted in long-term care facilities being the epicenter of the pandemic in various nations. In France, one-third of all coronavirus deaths have been in care homes, and in Canada, almost 80%. This is an international issue of concern, since in more than half of nations belonging to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, or the OECD, population aging has exceeded growth in the number of LTC workers. In many higher-income nations, deaths linked to the COVID-19 global pandemic have been concentrated in residential care facilities, including LTC facilities that house the elderly or those needing assisted living. Suddenly, the conditions of those working and living in these facilities have become a key concern for the public. LTC workers are predominantly women, and in Canada, migrant and racialized minorities are overrepresented in this sector. Also in Canada, workers in this sector are low-paid, short-staffed, and mostly part-time, who often piece together two or more jobs across many families and facilities. COVID-19, as with other epidemics, exposes how such working conditions undermine infection control protocols and make workers and residents vulnerable to infection. This Balsillie paper provides some context regarding the care crisis in LTC facilities. In particular, its relationship with the type and skill mix of labor, including the degree to which immigrant workers are represented in this sector. The paper will highlight two of the contributing factors to this crisis. The first is the gendered and racialized devaluing of migrant labor that is so essential to this sector. And the second is the role of the private sector in the unsustainable extraction of profits from this service and the labor that provides it. Section 1. Context. High-income nations face aging populations in need of care, and yet they often lack the necessary workforce to fulfill their needs. In France, for example, the number of individuals over 65 is set to increase by 40% by the year 2030. In Canada, those over 65 make up 15.6% of the population, and this demographic is set to grow to 23% by 2030. In OECD nations, 90% of LTC workers are women, and approximately 45% of them work part-time. In Canada, there's an average of 4 LTC workers per 100 individuals over the age of 65. Ontario faces especially dire working conditions in LTC facilities, with studies indicating insufficient training for caregivers, rigid hierarchies within facilities, understaffed homes, and poor levels of care. In Ontario, the provincial government has failed to fund LTC appropriately. Between 2011 and 2018, there was a 0.8% increase in available beds in public facilities, while the waitlist for beds almost doubled in number. Pat Armstrong and colleagues contend that years of governments deprioritizing the sector have rendered those in care much more vulnerable to COVID-19.
In Canada, residential care for those in need of assistance with daily living includes a range of facilities, many of which are assessed and monitored using the Continuing Care Reporting System, or the CCRS. The clinical data standard for CCRS uses a reporting system developed by InterRAI, an international research network. There's a range of residential facilities, varying from short-term, post-acute care and skilled nursing facilities to long-term chronic care and nursing homes in institutional settings. The degree of clinical care provided and the skill mix of workers differs across these institutions and can include physicians, nursing staff or registered nurses and registered practical nurses, other allied health professionals, and personal support workers, or PSWs. PSWs are unregulated care providers with no defined scope of practice, whose role has evolved to include functions formerly provided by regulated health professionals. As the intensity of care increases and the need increases, the mix of workers includes more regulated professionals, but it is clear that PSWs are essential to most residential care facilities. Research has indicated that these factors, combined with the variation in PSW education and employment standards, has significant implications for patient safety and quality of care. PSWs in this sector are low-paid, short-staffed, mostly part-time, and often piece together two or more jobs across many facilities. Part 2. Long-term care homes, personal support workers, and migrant labor. High-income nations have seen women move into the workforce without states providing social welfare systems to care for children and the elderly. That is, the unpaid labor that women traditionally provided. In these higher-income nations, care work has effectively been outsourced from being the responsibility of women within the household. It's now racialized women from developing nations who leave their own families to care for others. This care labor is both commoditized and devalued, with compensation far below the actual value of the care provided. This process has been captured through the concept of global care chains, a series of global connections or a chain based on the paid and unpaid work of caring. These chains allow for the extraction of care based on the exploitation of multiple divisions, including gender, ethnicity, class, and uneven development. The World Health Organization, or the WHO, has referred to migrant women care workers as a cushion for states that lack adequate public provision for long-term care, childcare, and care for the sick. The WHO identifies a care paradox wherein migrant women work to fulfill the growing need for care workers in high-income and middle-income nations and strengthen weak health systems while lacking health services themselves. This paradox is highlighted in the challenging role visible minority and migrant women play as care providers and PSWs in LTC homes, typically working in low-paid positions deemed low-skilled, while actually performing complex and essential services for vulnerable populations. Internationally, the number of migrant care workers in LTC is increasing. In the United States, as of 2011, 1 in 4 care workers in LTC were migrants, a 5% increase from 2005. In the United Kingdom, the number of migrant care workers more than doubled between 2001 and 2009, from 7% to 18%. A similar trend can be found in Canada, with research suggesting migrant workers represent up to 50% of LTC caregivers in certain provinces. The demographic shift in who performs care labor in high-income nations is evident, and racial as well as gendered intersectional prejudice cannot be disassociated from the crisis of care in LTC homes and facilities. According to the 2016 census, visible minority workers are overrepresented as nursing home employees across all Canadian provinces. What is consistent across the literature is that care work is socially regarded as work to which women are naturally predisposed. It is thus essentialized as feminine labor and considered unskilled, which facilitates its devaluation. Immigration and employment policies, combined with these structural forms of gendered and racial discrimination, create precarious employment conditions for immigrant workers in this sector. Employers can naturalize this labor market segmentation by reproducing ideas about certain racial and cultural backgrounds, making migrant workers better at caring for older populations and less likely to complain about strenuous or difficult work conditions. Employers often believe that migrant workers are more likely to be willing to work longer hours and are more flexible with shifts. Restrictive immigration status combines with these labor market contexts and makes it easier to retain immigrants in jobs with working conditions non-migrants would not tolerate. Additionally, immigrants might be attractive as high-quality workers for low-skilled jobs, especially in non-regulated occupations where skills can be determined by the employer and reflect their interests, including what they want to pay and how they want people to behave. Employers surveyed between 2007 and 2008 were more likely to employ migrants in non-professional positions than in professional ones, such as doctors or registered nurses. These preconceptions can lead to problematic relationships between employers and workers, with employers opting to fire migrant workers before they complete the number of years necessary to become permanent residents and thereby access greater rights. Employers can leverage the precarious status of immigrant caregivers in order to pay lower wages and maintain working conditions more favorable to the employer's interests. A new approach to managing the burden of LTC is the offshoring of care. There are specific examples of the offshoring of dementia care to Thailand, for example, where Alzheimer's patients from Switzerland and Germany move to Thailand to find quality LTC. The benefits of this offshoring are that the price of care in Thailand is significantly cheaper than in Europe and can be privately purchased, making it more accessible. At Ban Kam Lung Che, an LTC facility for patients with dementia and Alzheimer's, promotional literature states that each patient has three caregivers. The level of care a patient can get at this Thai facility is significantly better than a patient might receive in high-income nations that face shortages in caregivers and spaces in LTC. However, this offshoring of care is also rooted in problematic assumptions, mainly that Thai individuals care better for elders due to their cultural beliefs. Further, similar to the use of migrant labor locally, the use of women's labor in places such as Thailand depends upon the ability to pay less for higher quality care. The exploitation of women of color occurs in a different context, but is based on the same assumptions about care being naturalized as feminine. Section 3, the financialization of long-term care. Part of the larger debate about the crisis of elder care in high-income nations is how LTC should be financed. What is consistent across different nations is the sheer cost of LTC. In the next 30 to 40 years, high-income states will need to double spending in the LTC sector to keep up with aging populations. For example, the European Commission estimates that the European Union will need to increase spending on LTC from 1.8% of GDP to 3.6% by the year 2060. There are different political interests and approaches to the financing of LTC. In Canada, the United States, and the United Kingdom, there has been a growth in private ownership and operation of LTC facilities. In Alberta, for example, in Canada, there has been a recent push towards selling two publicly owned LTC homes in order to cut costs, increase revenues, and open up more beds. According to the Ontario Long-Term Care Association, the OLTCA, 58% of long-term care facilities are privately owned. Furthermore, these facilities, both private and public, are facing shortages of nurses and PSWs, and this shortage has been especially deadly during the ongoing COVID-19 crisis. Despite the various approaches to funding LTC across the globe, approaches are generally unsustainable as the world population continues to age. In Germany, Japan, and South Korea, citizens must opt in to mandatory insurance schemes to help finance their stay in LTC. In Japan, LTC is funded by the national government, with insurance premiums paid by citizens, and access to LTC is means-tested, with access dependent on age and ability. In Korea, the program is partially publicly funded, but not means-tested, and universally covers citizens over the age of 65. In France, LTC is publicly funded through taxation and has achieved around 70% coverage. In the United Kingdom, LTC is also publicly funded. However, patients face means testing, and some are also required to contribute to co-payments for living in the facilities. In the United Kingdom, many LTC facilities are privately owned and managed. Small private companies often rely on banks to finance the LTC homes they own, and this type of funding is often stricter and more difficult to obtain. However, larger private organizations that own multiple LTC facilities have recently shifted to private equity firm investment, which, in comparison to public markets or banks, is more tolerant of high levels of debt. As a result, private equity firms such as Blackstone or Alliance are investing money in poorly managed and debt-encumbered LTC homes that would be deemed risky investments. The need for increased private investment comes as a result of increased austerity measures by the government and decreased public ownership and funding of LTC facilities in the United Kingdom. The private companies that own LTC facilities then choose to open branches that seek to serve poor and underserved communities in order to ensure that they receive the public funding available. These private equity firms make a profit through the buying, selling, and investing in real estate assets, not through the daily business of managing the facilities and the care of patients. In the United Kingdom, LTC is regulated by the state through a quality assurance framework. Facilities are required to register with the Care Quality Commission and fulfill the requirements outlined by the Commission. In this way, both public and private facilities are set to follow the same expectations. However, the opposing interests of private financial interests and government requirements make the operation of LTC complex and effective regulatory oversight and enforcement necessary. Research suggests that nonprofit providers offer higher quality care than for-profit providers. Similar LTC issues are faced in Ontario, and these have been further highlighted by the COVID-19 crisis. LTC facilities are run by private or public companies, nonprofit organizations, or municipalities, and these facilities must be licensed and funded by the Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care. Facilities can be privately run and owned, but the fees of individual residents are publicly funded, with some out-of-pocket costs or co-pays. Ontario's current Progressive Conservative government cut funding to LTC facilities before the COVID-19 crisis. On October 21st of 2020, the Ontario Health Coalition published an update on the ongoing crisis, stating that there have been outbreaks in 155 LTC homes, with 2,687 confirmed cases and at least 341 deaths. A report published by the Ontario Health Coalition on May 6, 2020, shows that the rate of COVID-19 deaths in private care homes are double those in publicly funded homes. Pat Armstrong and colleagues assert that Ontario's push to privatize LTC is in direct contrast to evidence against increased private ownership of health services. Experts have offered their recommendations. The government should determine how to address them. Part 4. What's next? In a letter addressed to Ontario's LTC facilities, Deputy Minister of Long-Term Care, Richard Steele, writes, While we have all been focused on managing emerging crisis situations, as the course of the pandemic evolves, it is essential that there is a clear focus on returning all homes to a state of staffing stability. However, the claim that LTC facilities in Ontario had staffing stability before this crisis carries little merit. COVID-19 has highlighted the care crisis that was already occurring in Ontario, throughout Canada, and across high-income nations, a crisis exacerbated by a lack of regulation and increased private interests. With the problems of the sector clearly defined, governments are in a position to recognize and address the shift in priorities now needed to substantially improve the outcomes for LTC workers and residents. It's important to begin by recognizing that increased involvement of private interests is detrimental to LTC. Private companies look to cut costs in order to increase their bottom line, and the biggest expense is labor. The squeeze on workers' pay in this sector has resulted in poor working conditions and positions that are increasingly filled by marginalized and precarious workers. The squeeze on labor has contributed to the deterioration of care, as fewer workers are employed to deal with complex care needs with less training and support. Armstrong and colleagues state that the conditions of work are the conditions of care. Addressing the needs of workers is thus a first step to tackling all LTC issues in Ontario. The following recommendations, based on expert opinion and government-commissioned reports, address the failing issues of labor and funding in the LTC sector. First, workers' compensation in LTC facilities must be better regulated, ensuring that workers make a living wage that is commensurate with the valuable, difficult, and labor-intensive work that they perform. Second, LTC workers should be hired into permanent, full-time positions to allow workers access to employee rights and benefits and to minimize the number of care workers employed at two or more LTC facilities. Third, care workers who enter the country as temporary migrants should be regularized to allow them increased access to Canadian and provincial employee rights and to minimize their vulnerabilities to employer exploitation. And finally, number four, LTC should be deemed a medically necessary criteria under the Canada Health Act, in line with the recommendations proposed by the 2002 Commission on the Future of Healthcare in Canada, the Romanow Commission. Today's episode, Migrant Care Labor and the COVID-19 Long-Term Care Crisis, How Did We Get Here?, was written by Lena Gawai and Margaret Walton-Roberts back in June of 2020, and it can be found online in Volume 2, Issue 2 of the Balsillie Papers. For more episodes of the Balsillie Papers podcasts or to download free PDFs of each peer-reviewed Balsillie paper, check out our website at www.balsilliepapers.ca. Thanks for listening, and until next time, stay safe out there.